Good morning, my friends. Good morning and welcome. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. It is now Thursday, April 26, 2007, midnight here in the Central Time Zone. I'm thrilled you're with us. Welcome to all of you joining us on shortwave at frequency 3.215. Welcome to all of you listening online at republicbroadcasting.org. And maybe you're listening over on our site, franklyspeakingradio.com. Welcome to all of you. I would encourage you to go and check out the website of our guest. You can follow along. There's lots of great information there for you to peruse. It's www.adamthemissinglink.com. And the author of the book, Marshall Klarfeld, is joining us. Marshall, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you very much. When we left off, we were talking about a variety of, I guess you could
story.
Say.
Story.
Yeah.
Several other things I wanted to mention. Besides this king who's a demigod, there is a DNA. That they had knowledge of DNA is evident in some of the cylinder seals that they show, because one of the characters in the story is Enkidu, which is a clone of the king. You know, they made an adult that was exactly like the king, and that's shown in the cylinder seals, and it's told in the story. So that cloning becomes part of this story. There's also the traveling space age travel of he goes to the landing platform and he witnesses rockets taking off. He hears it and sees the light and the sound. And then also we have Ishtar, who's one of the main characters, this female that's down at the bottom of my page there on irrefutable evidence. She flits back and forth by her vehicle. She's able to go by her whirlwind from Uruk, which is the king's hometown, to the landing platform and get in a shuttlecraft and go up to the orbiting mothership. So all this information that has been put into this story, I think, was for a reason. They wanted to let us know that that's our future. This is what we're going to have: cloning, we're going to have DNA, we're going to have space travel. Because if they are our ancestors, it's obvious that we are going to become a space-age people also. We've inherited the instincts and the DNA information to do that, and we've already kind of crept in our first tentative steps to the moon and back, and we're planning longer and greater voyages. And the whole aspect of why are we doing that? Well, that's what we do, because that's where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
it makes sense to me.
It does, and there are some other things, obviously, that I think are significant about this, and obviously we'll have to, you know, wait till a little bit before we start delving into these things. But here you've got this space, you know, faring race who interacts with us. They leave us, as you mentioned, these clues about various things, such as, of course, weapons and science and travel and things like that. Well, guess what? Obviously, they came from somewhere. And obviously they mentioned these things. It almost seems like there would be some connection between their return and the achievement of these things. Well, here we have all of these things now just recently achieved. And, of course, there is talk about Planet X and, you know, various things like that. So, you know, and of course, you got the 2012 date on the calendar that all, I think, coincides with big things coming relatively soon.
Well, that if you want to talk about the 2012, I can give you some background as far as I'm curious about that.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And I know from my research how it was devised and why it was devised as a calendar. In other words, that what they call the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the number 52 is very prominent in there, and that's the biggest clue, because the son of Enki's name was Thoth, T-H-O-T-H. And he was exiled out of Egypt around 3001-13, and that's the beginning of the calendar.
Mm.
So that coincides. And the Mayans called him Kuku Khan, and they said, you know, he was not like them. He had a big nose, and he had a white skin and a beard. And later on, he was called Quetzalcoatl. But it's the same individual who's doing the same thing in Mesoamerica that was done in Mesopotamia, in Egypt. So these things kind of go in cycles. And he changed the pyramids. He was actually the designer of the Egyptian pyramids, according to the tablets. And what he did when he got to, Chichen Itza, that's the pyramid I show at the top of the page on the left. And it's a different kind of a pyramid than the one that, that was done in Egypt, because it gives access to the top, where the temple was, by stairways on all four sides. By the way, it's also a calendar, because the add up the number of steps on all four sides, you come to 365.
Wow.
And, you know, there's other aspects to it. But this incredible intelligence and this fascination with the celestial movements of our solar system and the other parts of the universe was something that they were masters of. And since they knew it, they have been transmitting it to us through the various features that we find. And the Mayan calendar is the 52-year cycle ends. The last 52-year cycle ends on December 21st, 2012. Now, a lot of people think, okay, that's the end of time, because the Mayans wrote that it was the end of time. That's as far as the calendar went for them. But actually, it just repeats over again, because the thing is cyclical. You start over with the next beginning at that point. You just keep repeating itself. I don't think it's the... the divine time scale.
Yeah.
You talk about celestial time and divine time. Come back from the break.
Yes, sir. I look forward to that. Folks, please stay with us. Our special guest, Marshall Klarfeld, will be back, as will I, of course, in 3 minutes. Keep in mind our phone number to ask your own questions, 800-313-9443. Stick around.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
something deep inside the sky. I try to understand my cries. There's nothing here that really matters.
Welcome back. Glad you're here, folks. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Glad you're here. Our phone number, of course, 800-313-9443. Marshall Klarfeld, our guest, author of the book, Adam, The Missing Link. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you very much. Please continue.
Okay, well, I think that through time, even the Anunnaki themselves were dealing with the various ways to keep time. And that's why we have a lot of objects. But to make it as simple as I can, they had what was called celestial time. And celestial time had to deal with the rotation of our solar system through the zodiac cycles. Now, the zodiac, they created the zodiac and gave us these 12 different frames. And there's a thing called precession. And precession occurs every 26,000 years, which means that the Earth and the Sun move from one zodiac sign to the next. And that's something that, you know, I don't know how anybody else would have figured that out, particularly humans wouldn't be around long enough to figure
yeah.
out. Well, they knew it, and they gave us this celestial time. Now, the other time they had was called divine time, and divine time had to do with the orbit of their home planet, Nibiru. Every 3,600 years, which was 1 year for them, in other words, it came around through the sun and went back out into the Oort belt, was a time that they revered, and they used it for ceremonies to commemorate da-da-da-da-da. Now, the reason why I think, this is my own theory, Thoth, the son of Enki, created the Mayan calendar was because it was the most precise way to include all of them. And there's three different calendars in there, but the one that, you know, the one that's ours and one that's divine time and tells about precision and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Precession. So there many religions have gone through wars over this. There was a bunch of stuff in Egypt between worshiping the sun or worshiping the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason that the sun and the moon were being worshipped was they were ways of counting time. The sun moved around the mm-hmm. horizon and repeated itself, and that was detected by things like Stonehenge. You can see the winter solstice and the summer solstice. Mm-hmm. The moon had a 29-day cycle. And by the way, before there were any stones at Stonehenge, there were 56 holes in the ground, white chalk holes. They're called the Aubrey holes. This is the first phase of the construction of Stonehenge, and there was a ditch that these were inside this 3-foot-wide ditch that went all the way around. And by the way, that was in a place where there was a lot of chalk. So the ditch was white,
mm-hmm.
and the holes, the 56 holes, were white. And they took a black stone, and they moved it in conjunction with the phases of the moon, and it went around the circle. And at the heel stone, which is the anchor of this circle, the eclipse of the moon occurred at that particular geographic location in England and at the Salisbury Plain every 18 years, and then it was a 19 year. And if you add 18, 18, and 19, you get the 56. So here was a calculator for predicting the eclipses of the moon, which was important to them to be able to know that,
mm-hmm.
that worked on the ground and could be also seen from the air. In other words, it was a landmark, kind of a beacon, because when you're zooming over in your shuttlecraft, you could see these white circle with the 56 white dots inside of it. So, again, it's a double usage. But keeping time of how the eclipses of the moon and also the phases of the moon was first thing that they did at Stonehenge. Then came the stones, which was to the sun. So here we had a circle for the moon, and then the inside stone arches were keeping time of the sun, predicting when the sun would come through the arch and hit the heel stone at the two solstices. So there was this kind of two sets of time that were in conflict. And I think this guy who did the Mayan calendar tried to resolve that.
Wow.
By making such a precise calendar that nobody could argue with.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting. I mean,
it sure is.
Time was very important to them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But so, as far as December 21st, 2012, I wouldn't have people worrying about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, in terms of Stonehenge, you mentioned about the significance of that. I'd like to talk about some of the other some of the other things. Of course, the Great Pyramid and the other pyramids as well, certainly in the Giza area.
Right. They were built as beacons initially. They needed something to replicate. There were twin peaks in Mount Ararat that were snow-capped all year round. Mm-hmm. So by building the two large pyramids in Cairo, with white faces that reflected the sun. In other words, the stones, the casing stones, were polished optically almost so that they reflected the sun brilliantly to the horizon. And these two peaks, when lined up with the two peaks at Mount Ararat, the line crossed over the landing platform, which was in Baalbek, Lebanon. So the initial reason that I read in the translations that they built them was to be kind of a navigational guide to anchor the line for the landing platform. Now, you might say, well, you know, if they were so brilliant, they had all this engineering and brilliance of intelligence, why would they need something like that?
Right.
Well, imagine the virgin Earth, like we went to the moon, was virgin. There was nothing there. There was no infrastructure. It would have been very helpful for our astronauts to have had some kind of a lineup.
Yeah, just a landmark.
Just a landmark.
Yeah.
You know, and so they did this, and of course it had other purposes. There were many things that are explained in the book that the Great Pyramid did besides just being a beacon.
Mm-hmm.
But it went dark every 12 hours. In other words, the Earth is revolving, and if you're orbiting the planet around the equator, and you use that as a fix, it's going to be dark for 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, just exactly 12 hours to the west of Giza is Easter Island, which is in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, 2,000 miles from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you have these statues with their coral eyes, which are like the little Boy Scout mirrors. And there's 900 of them. That means 1,800 little mirrors in a circle around this island, which could have acted also as a beacon, which would be in the daylight while Giza's in the dark. And that's a theory that I propose. I think you and I have talked about, you know, you never heard about that before.
No, that's the first time I've ever heard that.
Yeah, and, you know, I really think it's valid. I haven't had anybody challenge it yet, but I'm waiting, and, you know, give me another reason why they put the...
Yeah, well, that's...
Coral eyes on the
well, that's exactly right.
Like them. In other words, the statues have beards and big noses.
Yeah.
You know, and they're sitting on platforms that are like the stones that you find in Peru that are so tightly fitted that you can't put your credit card between them.
Right.
Yeah,
there's, like as I had mentioned, you know, I've always been just sort of an archaeology aficionado. I've always been a big fan of looking at those things. And I remember studying Easter Island and all these sort of other archaeological anomalies, you know, and there's so many about Easter Island. You know, why are they there? What happened to the people? How did they move these statues?
Yeah, right.
And also, you know, all of those things. So,
yeah.
You know, nobody has even, to my knowledge, speculated a decent reason for why they're set up in that fashion. And why they have the eyes and what they could be utilized for. It was the first time I'd ever heard that is when I'd read your book. But, you know, archaeology seems preoccupied with the other aspects of it, all of which can easily be explained using your theories as well. So let me ask you to hang on. Folks, we're back in 3 minutes with more Frankly Speaking Radio. Please stay with us.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit CoreDocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves and More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. The state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
Welcome back. Glad you're here, my friends. You're listening to the fastest 4 hours in talk radio. Frankly, speaking radio is what we call it. And our phone number, as you should know, 800-313-9443. Our special guest this evening, Marshall Klarfeld. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to get into one part of this story that you touched on in the beginning in the introduction about the connection between creationism and evolution.
Okay.
And the Anunnaki. And in the stories that they have given us through the cuneiform tablets, they refer to their deity. And their deity is called the creator of all, according to them. And we really don't know who created them. So if you accept the fact that they respect a higher power and that this thing maybe has gone on for millions and millions of years, and that we're just one part of the chain, it doesn't. It includes creationism and it includes evolution, because genetically engineering theory is the third alternative, which says yes, there was a creation, and yes, there has been evolution, and yes, there is a deity, and the Anunnaki called their deity the creator of all. So I just wanted to mention that because I think people might assume that I'm, you know, not aware of the fact that, in fact, Frank, I believe in the creator of all.
Yeah, amen.
There are certain things that just have to be.
Yeah, well, you know, I've never ruled anything out, Marshall. I've always been open-minded about these things, and I've mentioned this before. You know, inherently speaking, if you just look at the definition, it's much like when you say UFO, you mean unidentified flying object. You don't necessarily mean flying saucer. Well, God is an extraterrestrial because he didn't come from Earth. So, I mean, he created it. So that means that, you know, but people are horrified by that concept of thinking of God as this little gray creature with big eyes and a little slit mouth, which isn't what I'm saying.
Well, the cover of my book is the famous painting by Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel of God creating Adam. The Bible says that God created man in his image.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take that, as obviously Michelangelo did, God was in the form of a Homo sapien, as shown in that picture on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And these astronauts were Homo sapiens. So somewhere back along the line, we don't know how far back, because they never told us, all we're dealing with is the history of what happened on this particular planet. And there's a very robust trail to follow, and that's what I've done. In other words, I took Zachariah Sitchin's translations, and I said, you know, let's prove it. And I think with the approach that I used as a solid engineering approach is let's look at the tangible evidence that exists to say that this has got merit.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned about the engineering, this ancient engineering that as you say in the book, and it seems like it's, you know, for anybody that has any knowledge of these enormous structures, not just the pyramids, of course, but others as well, you know, these things cannot be duplicated today, which I think is very significant as well.
Right. Yeah. No. And everybody tries to figure out how the Romans did it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But you got to use common sense. And we haven't got the technology yet to duplicate it.
Yeah, absolutely, which I think is very significant and indicates that there's something more at work here. So keeping that stuff in mind, you know, we mentioned about Easter Island and how, again, nobody's really speculated, you know, other than, you know, what you've talked about here tonight and anything I've ever heard of it is the why they're there. Most people have said, you know, what are they for? But we don't know. Who made them? We don't know. What happened to the civilization that did it? We don't know. How did they get from point A to point B? We don't know. But a lot of different ideas have come up. And it's much like when you're talking about the Great Pyramid, and they said, oh, well, they obviously had logs and ramps and lots of slaves. And, you know, my first question, even as a child, was where did all these trees come from these logs?
And, middle of the desert.
Yeah, and I was talking to another guest about something similar to this. And you know,
Giorgio.
Obviously.
Giorgio.
Yeah, well, absolutely. We've talked to him as well, and just the whole thing about it is, you know, when you've got giant blocks of stone, you know, on top of logs on sand. Well, you know, what's the first thing that's going to happen? Anyone who's ever played in a sandbox will tell you that log's just going to get pushed down. It's not rolling anywhere. So, you know, there's a lot to this, and it's important that we all understand that what we've been told is simply a theory. It's not fact. It's never been proven. You know, the history books just speculate. And anybody like such as yourself who has engineering awareness knows that these things don't hold up under scrutiny.
Right.
We're up to another break here, my friend. When we come back, I'd like to discuss the shape of the sides of the Great Pyramid, which I've never heard discussed really in any other form as well. And also some of the materials of the stones, which I think a lot of people may be surprised about as well. Folks, please stay with us. We're back in only 3 minutes with our special guest this evening, Marshall Klarfeld. And we'll take your calls, too, here if we can fit them in. 800-313-9443.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
in our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Good morning and welcome back, folks. Thrilled you're here. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whelan. Our special guest this evening is Marshall Klarfeld. You can go to his website and follow along with some of this stuff. Lots of great information there. It is www.adamthemissinglink.com. And remember our phone number. We'll squeeze him in here. 800-313-9443. Marshall Klarfeld, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. So when we left off, I was just asking you, you know, and this is just on the tail end of some of these, we mentioned ancient engineering and so on and so forth.
Right.
You know, the Great Pyramid has some anomalies that I've not heard discussed before, and certainly things that you cover in the book and we should cover right now. And one of those would be the sides of the pyramid.
Right. Okay. It's not obvious from the ground, but if you flew over at a certain altitude, you'd notice that there was an indent on each side of each pyramid. What I mean by an indent is the side isn't perfectly flat and square like a pyramid. It indents very, very slightly, and it's precisely done. And the reason for it probably was to hold the casing stones, which I'll talk about in a minute, in better configuration, but what it actually also replicates, according to Isaac Newton, who examined it and measured it, it's the radius of the Earth. Now, here's a piece of information, just one of hundreds of pieces of information built into the pyramids for us to find and discover. So with that in mind, they took and they put like a tile roof over the softer stones that were built. In other words, the pyramids were built with these blocks end-to-end, tier by tier, to give the shape. But when it was done, they put white limestone casing stones, which were polished on all six sides to an incredible precision, 0.01 tolerance. And then when they were laid in place, that's at right angles to the tiers. The tiers ran horizontally, but these ran at right angles and fit into the tiers. And they've discovered that they were glued together, Frank, that they sealed it just like you would have a roof on a structure. But in order to keep the water from seeping into the inner stones, they put a glue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the glue was so strong that it held them held these casing stones together, and was stronger than the stone itself. So in other words, when the earthquake hit and then some of them came down, they didn't break on the joints; they broke in the stones. But in addition to the casing stones, which produced this white reflective surface, and the surface was like 13 acres on each side, and it was polished optically, so that it reflected the sun brilliantly to the horizon. And there was a archaeologist by the name of Flanders, William Flanders Petrie,
mm-hmm.
who gave us this information. He wrote extensively about the pyramids, and I quote him in the book saying that merely to place such stones in exact contact would be very careful work, but to do so with cement in the joint seems almost impossible.
Yes.
It's to be compared to the finest optician's work on a scale of acres.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who was able to... We know what the chemical composition of the glue is, but we have been yet unable to replicate it. So
Wow. Here's
some technical science that we know exists. We don't know how to replicate it. We'd love to get some kind of masonry that was that great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now the next piece of the puzzle is there was another guy, the name of Joseph Defoditz, and he's done an analysis of these casing stones. He says, you know, it's really incredible that they were so precisely made that they fit and that they contoured with this slight indent and were fit closely to 1/100th of an inch, and you could put this in it. And he came up with this theory that they were manufactured, that these stones weren't quarried any place because he couldn't find a quarry that had a match to their composition. He went and did a radioactive spectroscopy slice of each of these and tried to find a match in the quarry 600-mile radius of the pyramids. Couldn't find it. So his whole theory, which still hasn't been proven, but it's certainly something to speculate about,
mm-hmm.
was that they were capable of manufacturing stones of this size in great quantity and also with great precision, besides gluing them together to give this reflective surface and watertight encasement. Now, one of the things you can look at, if you go to any picture of the three pyramids at Giza, you'll see some these stones still stuck together at the top of the second pyramid. There's over 1,000 white stones still hanging up there, and you wonder why the hell they don't fall down.
Right.
Well, the answer is they're glued up there. So it's pretty remarkable. This is just a few of the things of the technical aspect, engineering aspects of the pyramids themselves, and then, of course, inside in the chamber, the largest chamber in the Great Pyramid has 60 to 70 ton stones that are also glued together. And they're perfectly smooth. They've been polished like marble. They're granite, but they've been polished and glued together inside. And you wondered how they got them in there. And if you stop and think about all the chambers and passageways that exist in side of the Great Pyramid, what boggles my mind is if you lay out the plan, how would you build that? How you're doing layer by layer, right? As you're going up, and all these perfect angles and perfect shape rooms become part of the structure as it goes up.
Wow.
And then there are shafts that go off in 26 degree angles pointing towards various stars that are hollow. It's an amazing piece of engineering work,
mm-hmm.
right? And any of your listeners who want to, go into it, you can either get it in my book, or there's many, 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 many people who have studied this over years and years and years, and there's a remarkable piece of architecture, just remarkable.
Oh, yeah, on so many different levels. And yet, it's simplistic on the surface. Just to look at it, you'd say, okay, it's just a big structure. There's really nothing mm-hmm. significant about it, which, again, is probably why so little is known about it, because so little has been examined, really. But, the whole thing.
If you accept the construction theories that have been put forward about the main blocks,
yeah.
Tell me how you put these casing stones in at right angles.
Well, that's exactly right. And you could see it in the book that you have various pictures of it, and you could see that there's like a concave aspect to the sides
yes.
as well. So, obviously, the whole thing meticulously planned out in every possible way.
Yeah, way beyond the technology that I think we... and when you stop and think that the pyramids are held up on the foundation of this granite mountaintop, okay? Now, there are tunnels and passageways inside the pyramid, but also underneath the pyramid, there are tunnels that have been somehow fabricated down through granite, which is harder than copper and bronze. And they're perfect. They're perfect tunnels going into the foundation to chambers down below. And every time I see that, I say, how the heck was that done?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's just amazing stuff. Marshall, I want to open up the phone lines here and give the listeners an opportunity to ask their questions. And, of course,
sure.
I still have plenty of my own as well. Folks, our phone number, 800-313-9443, toll-free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. Let's go to Will in Missouri. Will, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Frank.
Of course.
A wonderful broadcast again. And your
thank
guest,
you.
Marshall, had just reached into my mind and pulled a name out that I wanted to bring out.
Oh.
I have a book that I found in a used bookstore. It's called Diggers for Facts. It was published in 1950 by a man named J.O. Kinnaman, who was a member of the Palestine Exploration Fund of Great Britain. He has as many abbreviations after his name as anybody could ever carry around in a wheelbarrow. But in this book, he talks about, the subtitle is The Bible in the Light of Archaeology. And he talks about Sir William Flinders Petrie, who was the one who inaugurated scientific archaeology in Palestine. And this, he says, began with a rapid fire five weeks work at the Tel Hesse during the year of 1890. And then during his work in Egypt, he had come to realize the importance of pottery as a chronometer in archaeological calculations and the dating of different levels. But it, throughout this book, much in alignment with what Marshall is sharing, they found a considerable record, not just in the clay work from Sumer, but also in carved into lintels and everything else as these excavations were brought forth into the light first and finally in the modern era. But what I am really concerned about, which ties to today, is the use of this depleted uranium in Iraq as basically a way of sealing up the book, closing the record, and stopping archaeological exploration in what very well may be the richest mine of scientific and technological understanding of not only the planet Earth, but the universe at large. And I'd wonder if Marshall would reply to that.
Well, Will, you bring up something that I'm concerned about also, and I appreciate you're bringing that forward. There is a ton more information that we need that is buried in the sands and in various libraries and so forth. We've gotten a taste of it, and the people who have taught themselves to translate cuneiform and cylinder seals have given us a good start and a good background. I'm hoping that when this situation is resolved, that we'll get back to filling in the blanks, because there's still a whole bunch of things that we need to know. What is the name of that book again? I'd like to look it up.
Well, if you could find it, it's called Diggers for Facts.
Diggers for Facts.
And it's the subtitle is The Bible in the Light of Archaeology.
Okay.
And the author is J. Period O. Period Kinnaman. It's K-I-N-N-A-M-A-N. Kinnaman.
Right, got it.
At Destiny Publishers, 1950.
Well,
fascinating book, a good read. He tries to, he obviously went there with the intent of tying the Bible into the archaeological record and did fairly well at it. He's fairly put it together quite well. But he also makes a very serious tie between Great Britain and the area that we are now, you know, discussing, Iraq. And I think that the this whole system, this whole Palestine process, this whole thing seems to me to be a way of masking what the Sumerians knew about the supernovas that happened in the space at that time.
Right, right. Well, what I'm trying to do, as I mentioned, if you heard the whole program,
yes,
is not only get it out through the book, but our project to do the trilogy in a film form should open up the discussion above the radar. We're sailing along here below the radar. Because it's information that a lot of people are unfamiliar with, and that they would shy away from, some of them, because it has some connotations that maybe go against their religious beliefs and so forth. But I think there's nothing to be afraid of in this story. I think that it's a story that should be publicized on a large, grand scale, and my goal in the project is to make these three films and get it out there. And let the people understand what is known now. More information is going to come along. The thing that I told Frank in our first interview is that there's been more people killed in the name of religion, my God's the right God, et cetera, in our history as humans than any other source of killing. There's been greed and wars and so forth. But I think if we can open up the information about where we came from to public knowledge and discussion, and also include the fact that there is a universal deity, the creator of all, it may eventually, not right away, but eventually put to rest this horrible events we're having as a result of religious fanaticism.
Marshall, are you familiar at all with that supernova that they have basically been able to verify that occurred, that you could see only from, like, in the vicinity of the Gulf of, what is the Gulf called? It's the, Hormuz, the Strait of Hormuz. Is
the, yeah, the Strait of Hormuz,
the Persian,
right.
Gulf.
I keep myself as informed as I can, Will, on the fact that the cover story on Discover Magazine this month is about the death of a star, and it talks about a supernova that we could see, and that there's, you know, hundreds of them happening in the universe. And,
well, this particular one occurred quite some thousands and thousands of years ago, but mm-hmm. from the angle that it occurred, it would appear as though when it flashed, when it exploded, that you could actually see. Of course, it would take light years to arrive at the planet,
yeah,
but
right.
You could see it as it was virtually dancing on the surface of the Gulf. And so there is a radio sonda or a radio telescope that I believe is in Australia or somewhere near there that they set up particularly that was able to recreate that location. But anyway, that's for another story. Beautiful broadcast tonight. I'm sincerely looking forward to going to your website after the program, and also.
Well, thank you. Thank
I
you.
Hope,
for calling
I
in.
Wish you the best of success with the three movies.
Thank you, sir.
Oh yeah, it's going to be very exciting.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you so much for the call, Will.
You know, get the story up the next level.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, and there are so many different intriguing aspects to the story too that, you know, it's interesting, Marshall, because maybe only now could the story be told in the way that it maybe should be.
Well, that's true. And you know, one of the things I think people are fascinated and go to the theater to see are true stories. And if this has some truth to it, it should maybe, you know, like Titanic was the greatest grossing movie ever, and it's a story everybody knew the end of. You know, the ship's going down. No, no question about that.
Yeah, kind of ruins the suspense, I suppose.
Yeah, but it was a true story.
Yeah.
Done in a very high fashion
mm-hmm.
way, and it drew over, $1.8 billion of gross.
Mm-hmm.
And other stories that have a nonfiction aspect to it, and I think this can be classified as kind of a semi-nonfiction. What we're going to do, and in the movies, we're going to give them the verifying shots at what we're talking about.
It's really exciting, and I think we're all going to be looking forward to that. Let me ask you to hang on, my friend. Folks, stay with us. We'll be back in only 3 minutes with our special guest, Marshall Klarfeld, and, of course, more Frankly Speaking Radio.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Did you hear about Joe Bannister, IRS Special Agent Criminal Investigator that quit the IRS a few years ago because the IRS failed to show him the law or legal authority for ordinary Americans like you and me to file and pay income tax?
What do you mean? Everyone knows that you have to file and pay income taxes.
Well, not only did the IRS fail to show Joe Bannister a law that requires you and me to file and pay income tax when Joe was working for the IRS, but even after Joe quit the IRS, the IRS failed to show up to several debates that the IRS was invited to debate Bannister about the legality of the income tax.
Wow, this is amazing information. Where can I find out more about this?
Go to the website at www.livefreenow.org. That's 760-868-4271. And the website is www.livefreenow.org.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
I talk of freedom, you talk of revolution, you'd much rather brag.
Welcome back, my friends. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Well, and I'm very excited that you're here with us. Let me remind you, of course, this hour is being brought to you by our good friends at PrivacyCrisis.com. You just heard the commercial, of course, and you've heard our guest, Grant Hall, talking about his book, Privacy Crisis, on the program. It's an amazing how-to book, really, that teaches you how to travel, how to bank, how to work, how to live anonymously in every sense of the word. And you can do so legally, and you can do so here in this country. You don't have to flee to another land in order to have freedom. You have plenty available to you, provided you have the right guidepost. And this book is a must-read. You can pick it up via ebook or, of course, via a hardbound copy at privacycrisis.com. You can buy it used at amazon.com, probably the most cost-effective way to do that. And if you don't have internet access and maybe you don't have a nearby bookstore that will carry it, you can always call Borders Bookstore, have it shipped to you over the phone simply by calling 702-433-6222. And what can I say? I think Grant will be with us on Monday as well, so you can hear from him about this amazing book, and we'll continue to talk about them. And again, we ask you to support our sponsors, support our advertisers who support this broadcast. And certainly our guest tonight is supporting this broadcast with his incredible information. His name is Marshall Klarfeld. The book is Adam, the Missing Link. Marshall, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. It's a pleasure.
Well, the pleasure is mine, my friend. I love getting an education, and certainly this book has filled in a great many gaps for me and I think for everybody who's ever read it. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I mentioned this sort of in the last segment there, about how, you know, being able to make these things into movies, you'd really need some of the technology we have today in order to visually only duplicate the technology written about in the past. And one of the things I wanted you to expand upon a little bit is The Bull of Heaven.
Okay.
Which
I
think
that's a good question, Frank. I mean, it's interpreted many ways. And in the screenplay that we've produced, Gilgamesh 12, the bull was the most powerful weapon that the Anunnaki had. And the reason they have horns on their helmets, all of them, all the leaders had horns on their helmets, is that Taurus was the sign of the leader. And the time frame that this all took place was when the Earth was in the house, the zodiac house of Taurus, the bull. And this, of course, is an important feature of the story. And the Bull of Heaven, to me, was a laser gun. Because what it did when Ishtar took it down in the story into Uruk and started trenching the territory up, she was able to create 200-foot deep trenches that people fell into and died, and it was causing all kinds of havoc. The only way you could do that was with some kind of a laser object that could powerfully remove things in its path. And the bull was the name for it, because when a bull snorts, flame comes out of its mouth. And so they use that. You know, a lot of times people, when you tell a story, can't understand the modern thing. In other words, if it was they couldn't describe a laser gun, so they made the bull the laser. And I think that this tool, and I use it in one of my pages in the book, was used to level the mountaintop. In other words, it destroyed all of the granite and created a level surface. And I show a picture that kind of proves that.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, too. And from what I understand, you're going to stay with us, and I'm very excited about this. Folks, we've got Marshall Klarfeld for the next hour as well. Be aware of our phone number, 800-313-9443, and we'll be back in about 90 seconds.